From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. The city and borough of Juneau hosted an open house Wednesday to gather public opinion on what to do with Telephone Hill. About 50 attendees showed up to weigh in on the potential development of the historic neighborhood. For some who live there, like Callie Connerton, the uncertainty around Telephone Hill's future is getting old.
It's been really, like, exhausting mentally and emotionally.
The downtown neighborhood perched below the state office building is home to a small apartment building and seven houses, including some of the oldest in the state. Until the spring, the state owned the neighborhood. But in March, ownership transferred to the city. Since then, the city has been working toward redeveloping the neighborhood, possibly by building new housing. But that redevelopment means that the people who already live there will have to move. And some say they're worried about finding new homes in Juneau's competitive housing market. Connerton grew up on Telephone Hill and rents there now. She says she's glad the city is listening to residents in this process, and so far, the city hasn't given them a move-out date or an eviction notice. But she says she's concerned about her father's quality of life if he has to move.
My family lives up there, and my father has Parkinson's. He has a TBI. Housing is really hard to find in Juneau, especially with, like, wheelchair access.
City officials said Wednesday's event was meant to get a sense of what residents think of Telephone Hill and what should happen to it. Presenters asked the attendees to share what opportunities and challenges exist for future development in the neighborhood. During the survey, most attendees stressed things like preserving the historic neighborhood, preserving the homes, and preserving the green space. The second most common theme was adding affordable housing. Mark Whitman doesn't live on Telephone Hill himself, but he says he values what the neighborhood has to offer: green space, historic buildings, and few tourists wandering around. He said he doesn't want it to be redeveloped beyond making the neighborhood better for the people who already live there.
We've seen neighborhood after neighborhood taken over by tourism, concrete, steel, glass. This is an opportunity to show that we can do something for local people well.
Officials say there'll be more opportunities for public comment in August, and that not redeveloping the area at all is still on the table. But they say plans for the neighborhood should be mostly drafted by October or November. And Alaska mining projects like Pebble have drawn national headlines. But another large mine you've probably never heard of is quietly preparing to start production in the interior. Proponents of the Manh Choh gold mine point out that it will create hundreds of high-paying jobs in an area of the state that needs them. But critics say federal and state agencies failed to properly review the overall impact of the mine. They worry that failure sets a precedent for other mining projects in Alaska and the lower 48. For Alaska Public Media, Sean McDermott reports.
When Barbara Schumann first heard about Kinross, Alaska's plan to transport ore across the interior as part of a new mining project called Manh Choh, she was shocked.
It just seemed unbelievable that this would be taking place or be allowed without special permitting and safety considerations.
The company, who is the majority owner and operator of the mine, will use nearly 250 miles of public roads from Tetlin to Fort Knox, their existing mill near Fairbanks. Kinross's plan calls for 60 round trips per day, or a truck every 12 minutes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
I don't know if you know that road. It's the only road people in Tetlin and Tok and all those little communities down the Richardson and Alaska highways, that's the only connection they've got to hospitals and airports.
As KUAC recently reported, the trucks will begin rolling by the end of the summer on what the company is calling trial runs, which will initially be empty. Fully loaded, these specially designed double trailer trucks will weigh 80 tons. They are roughly the length of two humpback whales. The winding route is primarily two lanes with few passing lanes or pullouts. Schumann regularly drives along the section of the ore haul route that passes through the heart of Fairbanks, and she worries sharing the road will come at a cost for everyday Alaskans. And for her family, it's not an abstract concern. Her husband's mother, brother, and sister were killed years ago when a commercial truck hit them head-on.
I just think that safety should take precedence. Human safety should be number one. Not profits. It should be human safety. And I don't think it is for the people that we're dealing with.
Schumann's a retired lawyer, and when she didn't feel like the state was taking her questions about the project's safety seriously, she helped form the community group Advocates for Safe Alaskan Highways. They say there's been a general lack of transparency about the mine's potential toll on public safety and infrastructure. The Alaska Department of Transportation has fast-tracked replacing five bridges along the route and plans over $300 million of infrastructure upgrades that won't be complete before the ore haul begins. Kinross declined multiple requests for interviews for this story.
Mon Cho means big lake.
The promotional video the company posted online doesn't address the trucking plan. Instead, it focuses on the project's economic prospects.
Mon Cho is Kinross, Alaska's first operation on tribal land. And from the very beginning, the company has been keenly focused on doing it right for the people and the land.
But the mine's environmental review process has come under scrutiny, too. Different federal and state agencies were responsible for various elements of the permitting process, but no agency is looking at the project's full impact. The Army Corps of Engineers was responsible for deciding the scope of the federal environmental review. Gregory Mazur is a project manager for the Army Corps. He says the Corps determined only a 5-acre area of wetlands would be permanently impacted by the dredging and fill for the new access road at Mon Cho.
So it was clear from the outset that this project was likely to not require an environmental impact statement.
But Mon Cho's ore is geochemically different from that at Fort Knox, where it will be processed, with the potential for centuries of acid generation.
I don't think any of us considered that as a potential impact, that they're bringing a different type of ore to the mill. So, yeah, I mean, that was outside of our scope of analysis for this project.
Other federal agencies disagreed with the review process. In written comments, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service expressed numerous concerns for fish, wildlife, and waterways. The Environmental Protection Agency suggested a more thorough review of the full project, but that hasn't happened. Mike Spindler, a retired biologist in Fairbanks who has decades of experience with environmental reviews, says this kind of divided responsibility is becoming more common.
It's called segmentation of permits. That's a strategy. If you segment the permits to just little aspects of the big project and you don't look at the whole thing, then the impacts don't look as great, and so the public blowback isn't going to be as great.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service raised concerns that watersheds around both Mon Cho and Fort Knox, including Tetlin Lake, Toke River, and the Little Chena and Chena Rivers, could be impacted. Spindler says the lack of a comprehensive environmental review for the project is glaring.
I don't know how the conclusion could have been made that no EIS is required.
For some local residents in Toke, these questions pale in comparison to the opportunities the mine might bring. Bronk Jorgensen, whose log home looks out over the hills where the Mon Cho project is underway, says Kinross has been making sure smaller contractors like him can bid on jobs for the mine.
We are not a destination in Alaska. We are a pass-through town. So this will be the first real industry this community and area has seen on any scale.
Jorgensen acknowledges the increased truck traffic might be inconvenient, but says the community has already seen an economic boost.
The indirect economic benefits to the Toke area are going to be very significant. When you drive through town, you can already see the number of mine support vehicles that are parked at the hotels, at the restaurants, parts store, grocery store.
Kinross is leasing the land for Mon Cho from the native village of Tetlin, whose tribal council have expressed support for the project. The council did not respond to requests for interviews for this story. While Kinross estimates that Mon Cho will create 250 construction jobs and 300 to 600 mining and trucking jobs across the interior, Tetlin tribal member Larry Mark worries the benefits of those jobs, and from the mine itself, won't be distributed equitably to the native village of Tetlin.
You got to benefit the tribe, benefit the people. Everything got to benefit them, you know. And it's got to be done right, and it's got to be in writing.
Community members also worry about the precedent the project could set for mines statewide. Jeff Benowitz is a Fairbanks-based geologist who's worked across the state. He thinks Kinross has done a good job at Fort Knox over the years, but bringing the potentially acid-bearing ore from Mon Cho changes things.
It isn't as much that I'm personally concerned that this is a hazard. I'm concerned that it's not being evaluated.
Benowitz explains that mining companies are currently eyeing many deposits along Alaska highways in order to use public roads for transporting ore, including the Parks and the Richardson, compounding the effects.
The reality is people don't care. But they're going to care when that's in their state and in their county. Once there's one truck, it's done. The precedent's been set.
Despite many unanswered community concerns, the Mon Cho mine is quickly moving forward. the company plans to start their full-scale truck hauling operation next summer. Reporting from the interior, I'm Sean McDermott.
This is KTOO.